Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. Before we get started, I'd like to ask a favor. If you haven't done so already, please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. If you've already done that, thank you. These ratings help the show get discovered so it can reach a wider audience. And while you're there, click the subscribe button so that you get notified of new episodes as soon as they come out. If you don't use Apple Podcasts, you can visit driveonpodcast.com/subscribe to find other ways of subscribing, including our email list. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everyone, today my guest is Jeff Banman. He's the host of the Mindset Radio podcast and the founder of the Operational Mindset Foundation. Jeff is a former soldier and firefighter. His mission these days seems to be very similar to mine with this podcast, so I wanted to be sure I got him on the show to share his story. I first heard about Jeff and some of the things that he does through a former guest on this show, Dr. Sherry Walling, who was on not too long ago, back in episode 32. She talked about meditation at the shooting range in her podcast, which I'll link to in the show notes. And when I heard about this, I thought Jeff, who conducted this meditation at the shooting range, would be a perfect guest for the show. Since the listeners of the show are largely current and former military service members, we're all pretty familiar with firearms. And if there's a way to work that in with mental health, then that's just a win-win in my book. So anyway, Jeff, welcome to the show. I don't want to dive into everything you do without giving you the chance to jump in. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I really appreciate you having me on today. Sherry's such a phenomenal human being. She's definitely been a great supporter of mine. I'm glad she introduced us. And it was very neat to have her out on range. And we can kind of talk about what that meditation shoot is and why, you know, it is the way it is. It's a pretty neat day out there. But yeah, absolutely. Simple background, grew up as a fireman, started before I graduated high school, volunteering, got hired right out of high school, spent a couple years, got a little bored, decided I needed a new adventure, joined the Army, and spent first half with 3rd Range Battalion, second half with a reconnaissance unit out of Fort Bragg. Did Kosovo in 99, part of the first guys on the ground there during the Serb invasion. Got out, went back to the fire service, was actually having coffee or having... was on duty the night of September 10th, having coffee with the guys the morning of September 11th, and then spent the next 4 days in response to the Pentagon in the D.C. area. And then shortly after that, got recruited by the intelligence community and spent a decade bebopping around the world and doing some really fun stuff. And then, like you said, today, really the focus is on the foundation with a mission to ultimately end what I call cleanup, right? The post stuff. A lot of great organizations doing a lot of great stuff. And absolutely critical, absolutely necessary, but you know, I believe we're kind of locked into a new world. You know, the game's changed and we're now kind of in this perpetual global conflict, and so I don't see an end to this at some point in time, and the foundation's really designed to get in early, to create early conversations, provide some early lessons and some tools up front. Even if the guys don't totally hear them right away, they're still there. They still live and really want to minimize the impact of the life that we choose to live. That's what the mission is now. So I really appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's take a step back up a little bit here and talk about the journey that you took to get to where you are now running the Operational Mindset Foundation and the podcast. Obviously you were a soldier, firefighter, but did you, I don't know, just wake up one day and decide that this is something that you're going to start doing? Was it a gradual process to kind of figure out what you're up to? Or was there some trigger that kind of sparked your interest in this line of work? What did that look like?
Well, I mean, it's been a gnarly 5-6 years, you know. Okay. I mean, I closed out my time with the agency about 2014, give or take officially done. I was running a company, doing a lot of the human performance work and human behavior stuff that I did in my last couple of years at the agency, doing really well. Decided to exit out of that. And then I say I kind of wandered the earth for a couple of years. really trying to figure out who I was. And then actually some of the group that I got, where I met Sherry and got involved in some stuff. It was, you know, this has been a personal journey, a professional journey. This wasn't an overnight thing. I've resisted the idea of a nonprofit for a long time. And actually, to be honest with you, I went away from the community for several years. I was kind of tired. I was a little frustrated by it. I was a little annoyed by the community, and I didn't really like what I saw going on. And, you know, I kind of ejected myself from the community for a little while. And I introduced myself one day, and a guy I really respect, business guy, very sharp, gray beard. He pulled me aside after we did our thing, and he looked at me and he said, "Jeff," and he's Australian, so he's got the accent, right, to back the statement. See, I'm not going to attempt to to mimic it, but he said, "Jeff," he said, "never again minimize your background." And that really sat with me. And that, I think, was like a shot to me that I'd kind of gone away. I'd tried to be somebody else. I'd really kind of tried to shut down who I'd been for basically my entire life. And then I was challenged to look at what was important to me. I was challenged to look at, you know, what do I want to leave behind? What really matters? And I got invited through some other sources kind of back into the community. We were talking about the operational mindset course I wrote years ago, looking at mental performance. And, you know, and I kind of started to peek in and see that we just hadn't made the progress we should have made. And so, you know, that's where it kind of all started to fall into play for me. And, you know, I believe firmly through the work that I've done, the interpersonal journey and the self-work that I've done, you can be the baddest mother out there, right? You can go out and execute and perform your mission or your job to the extreme when necessary. And you can come home and be normal and actually embrace this whole other side of your life. And so that knowledge, that awareness, that insight really is what the driver is behind the Operational Mindset Foundation. Because it is about putting guys in the condition where they can operate at their very best and then come home. And men and women, both, right, across the board. I say guys as a term of endearment, so it's speaking to everybody, you know. But it's like, that's what it's about. That's the essence of it.
Yeah, no, that's a great you know, kind of backstory to you know, your journey and figure out, you know, how you came along and came up with this foundation and everything. And, you know, I think a lot of what you do and what I'm trying to do with this podcast are very much in line. Ultimately, I want to help the service members, the veterans who might feel like there isn't any hope for them. But more importantly, I want to try to reach these people before they get to that point. And obviously, once someone's at that point, it's good to get them the information and the strategies or resources that they need to get themselves out of that, which we do with the podcast. But, you know, ideally reaching them beforehand is even better. That seems like, you know, exactly what you said, what you're doing with the foundation. You're going out to these first responders, the police, the fire, EMS, and what have you, you know, before there's a tragic situation that they don't know how to handle.
Even mid-career, right? Just the constant persistent stressors. I mean, I think, you know, I think we get labeled very quickly as having PTSD or having this or having that. And we've had big conversations about it. And I think there are other subtle factors that impact us that like to get labeled a certain way. And, you know, those are factors we can really manage and mitigate, you know, chronic stress exposure. Really kind of the long-term wear out. I mean, we've been at war now for 20 years and as of, you know, this recording, it ain't going to stop anytime soon, obviously. Right. So, you know, that chronic exposure, that chronic on, right? That state of always being turned on, always being available, always being ready, you know, and it comes in the fire service, and it comes, you know, if you're a, excuse me, if you're a military guy, if you're a police officer, if you're a firefighter, or if you're in the services realm, you chose a 24/7 gig. And we don't get trained how to turn it on or off. We don't get trained how to turn the volume knob up or down. And I think those are the underlying issues that wear us out over time, mm-hmm. you know, rather than the incident or the thing or whatever it was. I mean, there's still impact, but I also believe that impact and PTSD comes from lack of awareness to yourself and the situation you may find yourself in. It's a lack of mental and emotional preparedness for the events that may occur given the job you've chosen to take on.
Yeah, exactly. And I know, you know, for myself, even, you know, after getting out of the Army, I felt exactly what you're describing, that still being always on, you know, always, you know, head on a swivel kind of thing. And always, but it's like, you know, you're walking through the grocery store, and you don't really need to, you know, constantly be right. You know, hyper vigilant. You know, you're not walking down the streets of, you know, Baghdad or whatever. You know, so it is hard to turn off, and I think that that's probably a common thing amongst the military and first responders, that they are constantly aware of this type of stuff. You know, being hyper vigilant, you know, it is a hard thing to turn off. So it's, you know, a great thing that you are doing to, you know, kind of teach people how to turn that off, to come home and be with their families, you know, talk to their wives and their you know, husbands and their kids and, mm-hmm. and everyone else, their neighbors, without being this super intense, you know, police officer, or firefighter, or whatever the case may be. So, so yeah, it's really, you know, great that that's the direction that you are taking and trying to help people in that regards. So we talked a little bit the other day about before we started recording, and you told me that there were kind of four parts to the Operational Mindset Foundation, mm-hmm. four different you know, kind of categories. Could you walk us through some of that, kind of what it is that the foundation is all about?
Yeah. So first off, clearly is Mindset Radio, the podcast, you know, which is out on all the platforms. And I think it's a neat opportunity because we get guests both from the community and then way outside the community, you know, like Sherry Walling was on, Phil McKernan. I just had Jordan Harbinger on at the end of the year. So people that, you know, our world may not be normally exposed to, try to bring mm-hmm. some new people to the table there, some new conversations and get really at it. And then there's some, you know, I bring great people from the community in to kind of validate those. Right. To actually take a look at the conversation that we've been having and then does it work in the world or not? Okay. Cause yeah. I'm a big believer that you gotta be able to balance that, because not everything that comes out of academia or comes out of the psychology world or comes out of those places is valid in the field. And so part of that is that process. And then there's some teach backs and we take time on some stuff. So the Mindset Radio, the podcast, is really a first layer out to our community. The second layer is the training programs that we offer to departments and to the military, where we're able to go in, provide the operational mindset programs, which really, you know, balances resiliency with a higher level of operations and looks at performance factors. And so there's a variety of coursework there that we're able to get out through stuff privately funded and partnerships and get out and deliver that. And then, you know, the next parts are, you know, one of the critical parts we're going to be looking at later this year is kind of a trainer program that, you know, is the fourth element's kind of tucked aside. But then the other big piece are the experiences that we create. So, i.e. the meditation shoot. And, mm-hmm. you know, those are opportunities that we try our best to align really great people from the community, like a Sherry Walling or, you know, a high performing entrepreneur or some of the people that are out there, with people from the services, because there becomes this shared experience and this shared knowledge. And it kind of begins to unify some things for people rather than just being isolated in, you know, just the one shared experience. I'm a cop, I'm a firefighter, I'm a you know, service member or whatever it might be, gets them outside of their comfort zone, but then also really deals with feelings of safety and breath work and anchoring yourself in the present. And it's a pretty gnarly event. You generally, you don't walk away not having had a fairly significant experience out there. So, so that's the foundation. That's how we kind of work. And that helps us raise money and continue to do what we love to do.
Yeah, no, that's great. Again, I'm really glad that this is something that you're doing, because I think it's something that's definitely, it's a missing piece, I think, in the whole equation. I don't know of, you know, many other organizations that are handling these types of aspects of mental health before they're needed. Giving people the tools to, work their way through this stuff before they are exposed to the years of patrolling and years of, rescuing people out of burning buildings and, combat and everything else. A lot of it is reactive, that I've seen anyways, going on.
Or it's death by PowerPoint, right? Or it's like, exactly. Okay, we're going to talk about resiliency today. I've got to go take my quarterly resiliency class and sit in, and click through slides, and which I'm not really going to get anything out of, because the person talking has no idea what my life is like. And so I think that's a big difference for us too.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've all sat through the death by PowerPoint, trainings and gotten nothing out of it, but they check the box and they say, well, we've done this. It's,
you're now resilient.
You're now resilient. You have the skills you need, and, go on and go do whatever it is that you do.
Yeah.
And, that just doesn't work, as a proactive, type of measure. Now, one of the cool things that really got my interest that you started talking about a little bit is the meditation shoot. And and the reason why that was the thing that kind of piqued my interest when I heard Sherry talking about it on her podcast is because like I said before, a lot of the people who listen to the show are either current or former military, very familiar with firearms. And so to some people, there's that maybe fear of firearms. They're big, big scary things. They make loud noises. They could potentially be dangerous if they're not handled properly. And so people could be afraid of them if they haven't been trained on how to handle them. But that's not really the case with people in the military, because they've had the experience with firearms. So I feel like that kind of like eliminates the barrier to entry to get military members in to doing these types of shoots, even veterans. And so I'm interested in kind of how that works in terms, not just, we go to the range and we shoot and, that have a great time or kind of thing. But what is it that makes this kind of unique, and what makes the shooting aspect, either therapeutic, or what helps, people, by doing this kind of meditation?
Yeah. I mean, I think we've had, so you have to understand, we've had people that have never touched a gun before in their life. Mm-hmm. We've had people that are terrified of guns. And we've had all the way up to special operations snipers out of the range, right? And so we've run the gamut of people. And it's always interesting because, fundamentally, the time on the range in this context has absolutely nothing to do with shooting, right? Okay. I mean, when we go shoot, if we go out to the range, it's like, okay, how am I going to do? And I'm always, trying to hit where I want to hit. And if we're on the long gun range or if we're on the pistol range, it doesn't really matter. But the people that come with a background in shooting are always very interesting, because they suddenly discovered that, wait a minute, I'm not on the range today. I didn't go shooting. I'm meditating, right? That's actually the purpose of the day, And you know, things start coming up. So here's the foundation for it. Meditation as a practice can be one of the most valuable things you can learn to do, in my opinion. And the style that we teach is very much more an eyes open presencing practice. Okay. So really at the end of the day, it's nothing more than getting off the thought trains that are coming in and just coming back to where you are right now. And when you combine it with the breath work, biologically what happens is it triggers the vagal nerve up through the heart, or actually relaxes the fascia around the heart and starts to send signals to the brain that you're safe. And then you're anchoring that in the present moment, right? You got beautiful blue skies, you've got hawks, you know, flying by, you're in this great setting. You'll hear somebody else, you know, fire off a couple rounds, and you'll be like, okay, you know, somebody's shooting. And you get into this state where you are extremely calm and extremely present, and your body is relaxed because it is finally feeling safe. And then you come over to the gun. And the gun is going to present whatever the gun needs to present to you. And so, you know, if you're too hard on the trigger, right? If you're not paying attention to the simple resistance of the trigger and meeting the resistance where it is and pushing, you know, and driving through that shot, then you're going to miss, right? If you're shoulder into it, or if you're moving, or you're not settled, or you're not following the process, then you're going to miss. So there's all these things that come up, and what you actually get an opportunity to understand is the complexities of time, and that, you know, even shooting a gun, you will almost get to a state where you feel trigger, release, hammer forward, hit the primer, right? Ignite the powder, explosion happen, and the round actually leave the barrel, right? You'll actually begin to experience that in elongated state. And it's very cool, because so often in life, right, we just jam everything together. It's press the trigger, bang, that's it.
Right.
And then, you know, we deal with perspective and perception and then conditions and really being present to what's taking place. And it has, I mean, very few have walked away dry-eyed by the end of the day. And it's not because you're crying at something. The balance of it triggers a release in the system where you finally feel safe, and the body's just releasing built up anxiety, built up stress, built up things. And, you know, you may laugh hysterically, right? All the way into tears. You may just dump and cry, and that's okay, right? That's all part of it. But you walk away with a sense of time that you've probably never had before, and then a sense of presence that you've never had before.
Wow. I was not expecting that would be kind of the outcome from this. And that's, I think, pretty amazing, that it's as powerful as it is. So how are people then taking away from that, and applying it to their daily life, whether it's their home life or their work life, whether, you know, whatever it is, that their job is, you know, because obviously we don't all have, you know, shooting ranges in our backyards to go and just meditate every day. Right. And so, you know, how are they able to go through that kind of practice, come away with whatever it is that they come away with, and then apply that to their daily lives?
I think that's the interesting thing, because, you know, the meditation practice can be done kind of anywhere, anytime, right? And we give you the tools to do it in a designated time, in action, right? I mean, it's kind of what you see is the distinct styles we teach. It's kind of an always available thing, right? And fundamentally, no matter what we do, 9 times out of 10, we are very rarely present to the conditions as they exist right now. You know, we have a lot of expectations we put in place. We do a lot of, you know, what I call future casting, a lot of look forward, a lot of what if, do we need to do that? What about this? Or, you know, we exist heavily rooted in the past, right? Pain of the past on things. I often say, you know, fear fear can't occupy this space right now. Like, fear is nothing more than a projection into the future.
Sure.
That's it, right? Body, biologically, fear and excitement experiences the exact same way. Body doesn't know the difference between roller coaster or cliff. So I can be excited in the present moment. I can be in a scientifically a state of arousal in the present moment, but that is not fear. Fear only comes in when I start to project into the future, right? And that becomes doubt and worry. And so the practice embeds a level of confidence, enabling you to kind of anchor yourself now, see what's taking place, and then choose your course of action based on the conditions as they exist. And so the meditation practice you take with you, right? The meditation practice you integrate into your daily life. And that may be 1 minute. That may be 2 minutes. That may be 5 minutes. It doesn't have to be an hour. It doesn't have to be all day. You know, you don't have to buy the cushions. You don't have to do all these things. You can do it, you know, sitting in a chair in the morning. You do it drinking your cup of coffee. You can do it wherever you need to do it. But really the takeaway is the ability to anchor yourself.
Okay.
Because we're rarely here. And that may be, you know, interactions with our spouses or our children. You know, if we're frustrated, it's probably because we're anxious about something or we're dealing with something that happened. Right. And yeah. So that's where, and then, you know, when you hit a target at 1,000 yards and you hear it ping, right? And you hear the sound travel back to you after a few seconds, and you begin to experience like real satisfaction because you're present to what you just, the result you just produced. And In our world, you know, we're great at beating ourselves up. We're great at, you know, not good enough. We're great at, I can do better. We're great at all these things. And rarely do we allow ourselves to have a victory that we produced, right? The confidence that I didn't pull the trigger for you, you did. I didn't read the conditions, you did. You know, the only reason why that round hit that target at that distance is because you were here and followed the process and made it happen. And so there's that success that comes to with it.
Yeah, that's a good way to tie it together too, with, you know, that visual or audio, you know, impact of the round hitting the target and, you know, saying, you know, that trigger that says, yeah, I'm doing this right. I'm doing something right here. And so that's, probably helps to boost the confidence a little bit too, in terms of, you know, letting them know that, yeah, this is working. This is something that, you know, I'm present. I'm in this moment. I just did this because I followed all of these steps and I did the thing the right way. So that's pretty good too. The other thing I wanted to kind of dive into a little bit is the resiliency training. And I know we touched on that a little bit earlier and said, you know, you can't just do, you know, the death by PowerPoint and, you know, do that type of stuff. What does the resiliency training look like? You know, and not giving away your, you know, secrets or anything, but what does that look like in terms of what are people going to walk away with to be more resilient? So when something happens or when the 10 years or 20 years of service are catching up to them, what are they able to kind of take away from that?
Yeah. I mean, I think the core aspect for me around resiliency, which is kind of this big word, and has been created as kind of this act, right? That you do something. And in my world, I think that's absolutely not the case. And so, you know, in the programs that we teach, we do balance. We balance this operational capacity with the rest of our life, right? And so that you see through the programming that it all kind of aligns, right? I can't be all the way or great over here and not, and, you know, and not care for this other piece of me. And so really there's two factors that we hammer down on consistently and then demonstrate and then train and then show how they come about The two factors are, one, understanding transitions and how transitions work. And so, you know, we all have natural and normal transition points throughout the course of our lives. Maybe that's going to work or coming home. You know, maybe that's taking a lunch break, or maybe that's, you know, moving from one spot to the other, whatever it may be, right? Transitions are great entry points for the action, and the action is recovery. Okay. And so some of the things we talk about are kind of states of being, like what state am I in? Okay. Rather than what I'm necessarily doing, where am I physically, mentally, emotionally in this moment? And the core aspect that we teach there is how to be recoverable. Right. And so we break down what that looks like, what being recoverable looks like, because if I can be recoverable, right, IED goes off, bang, I'm still going, holy shit, we got hit by an IED, which means I have a course of action I now need to take.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, but if I don't recover from that moment, if I can't breathe, settle, and get really present to what's taking place and recognize that now the IED is over. Right. That's in the past. That's done. Went bang. Mm-hmm. We're on our side. Rounds are flying. Whatever's happening is happening. I need to get present fast, and I can't be stuck in the, oh shit, the IED just happened. I now have a course of action I need to take. Care for the people that are wounded, engage the enemy that, you know, may be ambushing us, whatever's happening, right? I need to move forward in action. I can only make that transition if I can recover from what just happened and get present to the conditions as they exist to see the actions I need to take. You know, it's the same thing walking in the house, right? You walk in the house at the end of your shift, at the end of your time, and, you know, kids are flying at you, wife's yelling at you, or husband's yelling at you, and it's like you either go, you know, bull and china shop right into it and you add to the chaos and the problem, or you settle yourself instantly, breathe, look, see what's taking place, and then choose your action based on things as they actually exist, not as you think they exist or as they should exist, right?
Right.
So that's really, there's, you know, that's a snapshot of where we get to, but at its core, that is a mental and emotional process that the more you repeat, the easier it becomes. The body's familiar to that. And, you know, it's a re-anchoring process that occurs constantly. And, you know, recovery comes anywhere from, you know, 0.0 seconds to maybe I need a couple days, right? When I worked for the agency, I always had about 3 or 4 days of transition when I came back into the country. And I had to be in the DC area to do my outbriefs and stuff, but I would lock into I would treat myself to a nicer hotel room, would have a nice dinner, right? I mean, right? I would take care of myself. Before then, I went all the way home to be with my family because that I needed that decompression time, that source time. And, you know, as service people, we don't take care of ourselves, period.
Right.
Yeah. There's no more to that. We just don't.
We don't. Right.
And
I was actually talking to somebody a couple of weeks ago whose son, unfortunately, so he was a soldier and he lost his battle with his mental health struggles. Mm-hmm. And he just never really kind of transitioned.
Yeah.
Fully, I don't think, you know, after coming back home. And one of the things that, so the person I was talking to is the mother of the soldier. And she said, one of the things that would be great for soldiers coming back from deployment is if they just went back to work like the next day after getting home and did a, you know, 9-to-5 kind of thing. And like, you know, light duty, we're not going crazy, but
right.
We're not going out to the field training. We're, you know, doing the admin stuff that needs to be done. And we're doing all that kind of stuff, but we're also checking up on each other and we're making sure that we are, you know, we're okay, you know, mm-hmm. before fully getting back home and walking back through that door and you know, going back to being with the family. Obviously everyone wants to, they've been away from their family for a long time, but you don't want to be the the person who walks back in and is a completely different person than you were, you know, 6, 9, 12 months ago, you know, when you left. So taking a few days, like you said, and just decompressing and transitioning back into, you know, call it civilian world, even though you may still be in the military, is crucial, I think, to get yourself, your mindset back, you know, to be able to handle the day-to-day life.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it's just, you know, it's, there's a place where, you know, we'd often listen, depending on where you come from and what unit you serve in and kind of the context why you joined the military, I've always said it's much easier to operate in the world, much easier to be at war than it is at home. That's just
for sure. Yeah.
People don't like hearing that, you know. I hope there's a lot of people nodding their heads right now. But spouses and families, they don't like hearing that. You know, there is this freedom that comes with operating in the world, with doing your job, with being the best you can be, with being with your people, right? And when you come home, you're not there anymore. And everything at home kind of feels like a nuisance, if you will, almost an annoyance. And then we make ourselves feel guilty that we're annoyed because we've been away. And the entire time we were away, all we really wanted was to be home. But now we're home, and all we really want is to be back. And, you know, and so those are the, to me, those are the fractures, right? That if we don't address them, if we don't have the conversation, if we don't validate it. I mean, 9 times out of 10, a lot of what we do in our speaking is we just validate the shit going on in your head. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like just, yeah, dude, I would rather be at war than at home a lot of times. And it's okay to feel that way. Right. Yep. When we start making ourselves wrong for feeling that way, when we let shame creep in, when we let doubt creep in, when we let those things creep in and we don't just accept who we are and we don't communicate it that way, that does that mean I'm getting on a plane tomorrow? No, but just being able to speak it out loud and say, you know, it's a lot easier there than it is here. It's being able to say that and being, have the freedom to say that and speak into what's real for us is so important. And I don't think we get to do that. We just don't get to do that. We have to be, all right, we're home now, you know, dad's home and now dad's got to give mom a break and take care of the kids. And, you know, I just spent 3 days on the side of a mountain in Afghanistan getting bombarded. And, you know, now I've got 3 screaming kids running at me and what am I going to do? Right. And man, I just want to go back, you know?
Yeah. And I think, so I'm one of the people, I'm sitting here kind of nodding my head, you know, the way you were saying, and, you know, I think I'm in that camp because I've seen a lot of people who have expressed that very same kind of sentiment where they just feel like it would be easier to be over there. And it does sort of make sense. There's very clear rules of engagement. There's very clear expectations for what your job is. You know, when something pops up that's unexpected, chances are you know how to handle it because you just probably shoot at it and until the problem goes away, right?
Right.
And you come back home and there are, I mean, every day is unexpected stuff happens, you know. And it could be little things too. It could be the kid spilled something in, you know, the living room or whatever. And it's just, okay, now what do I do? And how do I handle this? And how do I deal with the kid who's jumping on my back while, you know, I also have to, you know, be helping out around the house and doing all these other things. And it's a lot of unknowns. You wake up every morning not really knowing what's going to happen or how to handle it.
Well, that, and then you have to couple that with the biology. So you are locked into a biological state of readiness, of, you know, shoot stuff, of like command and control and make things happen. You are biologically there. That's not a mental process. That is an internal biological process that this is where the chronic exposure comes in, right? You are, you're, you know, set in a distinct brainwave pattern for an extended period of time. That just doesn't turn off. You don't flip a switch and have that turn off. And so, you know, these recognizing that, right? Recognizing that it's like, okay, because in the reason why you feel like you want to be back is because your body is still in that state and it's looking for an environment to match, right? It's, I feel like I'm on and ready and looking and moving head on a swivel. And this environment doesn't require that right now. So let me go be where that is required. Right. What we have to do, and this is part of the resiliency and the recoverability and these things that we talk about, what we have to learn how to do is recognize, okay, I need to give my body a chance to actually rewire itself. I need to give my body an opportunity, my biological system, my central nervous system, an opportunity to calm down because it's still running. I may logically know I'm home and everything's okay. And I may want to be home and be with my family or be with my friends or be normal, quote unquote, right? But my internal system is so spinning and so dysregulated and so wired for this other world that I can't align those two. And then I don't belong. And then it's better to not be here. And then it's better to be somewhere else. And then if I can't be somewhere else, where do I go? Right. And then I'm failing everybody around me. And then, and ultimately, then I just don't need to be here anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of people might just, like you alluded to earlier, just feel guilty that that's how they feel. And and you can't change how you feel about something necessarily. And you just need to, like you said, accept it and kind of work through that situation. So, you know, I talked to another guy on the podcast who I served with, and it sounds like pretty similar to kind of what you're talking about. And he found the outdoors where he would go outside and, you know, that became his gym, his church, his, you know, his therapy sessions and everything. He would get outdoors. He'd go for a hike. He'd go, you know, on a bike ride or, you know, whatever it was that he was doing. And that allowed him to kind of, transition, you know, from whatever that situation was that he was in to the next situation, you know, and allowed him to, kind of turn that off. And I think that's something that a lot of people, you know, coming back, especially coming back from a deployment where you're on every single day, 24/7, you know, but even, you know, police, fire, EMS, you know, where they're on, you know, all the time too, where they just don't really realize that there is that transition and it's okay to kind of go through that, you know?
Yeah. You gotta give grace to your system to catch up. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, it takes a lot to, you know, going through the training, going through developing yourself to be an operator at any level, right. Requires biological impact, requires traumatizing the system to be really good. Just point blank. That's all it is. And that trauma then develops a heightened sense of awareness and capability and all the great things that make you great in that context. Mm-hmm. FYI, it doesn't do shit for you at home. You know what I mean? Unless somebody's breaking into your house.
Exactly.
Right. So this is where the conflict comes into place. And this is where the gap is, because you can't talk your way out of this. You can't talk your way out of a biological state. It's not going to happen that way. And some people will, Sherry may even argue with me some of that, but I don't think so. I think we've had enough discussions there. Therapy's great, right? There is a reason for it.
Yeah.
And there is a reason it works. But ultimately, you have to give yourself the grace to say, wow, it's almost like another person inside you. And you have to let them spool down. Right. And so that's why the range is great. That's why some of the things that we teach and the programming that we deliver, I believe, are great, because they're all tools that help you regulate that central nervous system, that enable you to actually give some attention to what's taking place, not make it wrong, just is what it is, and then re-regulate yourself back to where you are now. you know, and then you can upregulate when you got to go back. Right. It's not like a, it's not like if I give this up, it's gone. I promise you.
Yeah.
I promise you're not going to, you may choose to do something different once you understand how to regulate, and that's okay, because that's a personal choice. Mm-hmm. But I promise you, as a human being, you can upregulate yourself and go right back and right back to doing your job and right back to being, you know, a badass mofo or whatever it is you do. That's not a problem. That's right. Not like you have a choice one or the other. And I think we feel sometimes like it's either this or that. And it's not that way. Yeah, it's not that way.
Yeah, absolutely. So Jeff, this has been a really great conversation. I wish we had, hours to you know, continue the conversation. Sure. Because there's a lot of good stuff here, but we are coming up on time here. So could you tell us where people can find you and find out more about the Operational Mindset Foundation, your podcast, and everything else?
Yeah, absolutely. Pretty easy. You can go to opmindset.org. That's opmindset.org. The information on the foundation is up there and available. You can also go to mindsetradio.com. That's clearly the website for the podcast. The podcast is out and available on all the major platforms. It's Mindset Radio, so you can just search through there or hit the website and link through to subscribe. Those are the two main sources. Facebook, I believe we're Mindset Radio Podcast on Facebook, where you can just search through Mindset Radio, the Operational Mindset Foundation on Facebook, and then Instagram, we're just Mindset Radio. Twitter, we're like Mindset_Radio, all the goodies. I'll send you the links to them.
Yeah, and I'll have all the links to all of those in the show notes too. So anyone who's looking to find that, you don't have to, if you're in the car right now, don't get into an accident trying to jot this stuff down. The links will be there.
Yeah. And one of the things I like to always leave is to make sure people know is I'm pretty accessible.
Okay.
I get messages all the time. I reply. I do my best to reply as quickly as possible. But, if you give me a little grace in that. But I have people reach out all the time, share what's going on. We can hop on the call. Like I do my commitment is to be available. So
awesome.
I want to just make sure your listeners know that.
Yeah, absolutely. And for the listeners who are listening to this and might be feeling like some of this stuff kind of resonated with you, and you might want Jeff and his organization to come and work with your department or your organization to kind of help your people out. Definitely reach out to Jeff. This stuff is not. Is no joke. I mean, it works, and it's going to help your department ultimately. If that's something that you're looking into. So definitely reach out and give Jeff a call or shoot him a message. I'm sure he would love to work with your organization. So thank you, Jeff, for being on the show. And like I said, all these links will be in the show notes. So you can reach out to Jeff there too. All right. Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com, or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.